We are now ready to call the meeting to order. Are we?
I think so.
Okay.
Is Commissioner Morsell online?
Yes.
And you are ready.
Yes. So I would love to have everybody keep an eye out in case I miss that she wants to speak. So make sure to let me know if it's Commissioner Morsell that would like to.
She's so small.
All right. Good evening and welcome to the October 26th City of Bellevue Planning Commission meeting. This evening's meeting and future meetings will be held via hybrid format with both in-person and virtual options in Zoom. Couple housekeeping items. Tonight's meeting will provide an opportunity for public comment during oral communications portions of the agenda. All written comments that have been submitted prior to 5:30 p.m. today will be summarized into the record. Following presentations by staff on this evening's agenda and to facilitate discussion with the commission, I will call upon each commissioner in attendance this evening individually to allow for questions and provide input. Roll call. Commissioner Brown, here. Commissioner Kalad, here. Commissioner Bogle,
here.
Mr. Malakuchin,
I'm here.
Mr. Morisot,
here.
Thank you. Councilmember Robertson is not here, I don't think. Commissioner Bargata,
here.
And Chair Harris is here. All right, I think we've been given a copy of the agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda for this evening?
I move that we approve the agenda.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of accepting the agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, I think we considered accepted. Tara, can you be able to give us some reports from Councilor Kendra?
Yes, because we do not have Councilmember Robertson here, so we don't have council reports. Good evening, Chair Ferris, Vice Chair Bargava, Planning Commission. Included in your packet, I'm just going to briefly go over kind of our schedule for the rest of the year. The slots that's going to be upcoming to you pending council launch in the next couple months. So we'll be working through an updated schedule for 2023, and we are actually doing that. So this evening, we're going to have a briefing on the Environmental Stewardship Initiative and Implementation Plan. We're starting to plan for your retreat, which is on November the 9th. So Planning Commissioners, we're going to, staff is going to be working with the Chair and Vice Chair and Council Member Robertson to plan the specifics of the retreat. But if there are pieces that, you know, things that you would like discussed as part of the retreat, please feel free to email me and we could certainly take that into consideration as we start planning for you. But staff has a few ideas and so we'll be working on the agenda for your retreat.
And the retreat again, the date on?
It is November the 9th. Your meeting in November is going to be the retreat.
And it will be virtual?
It'll be in person. Okay. It'll be hybrid. So we are offering, you know, it is a meeting. It's a public meeting. So anyone can attend the Planning Commission meeting just like your regularly scheduled meetings. But there will be, it will be at the Robinswood Community Center, Robinswood House. So we'll have dinner and then followed by that, we'll have the retreat portion. The second meeting in November, based on the proximity to the Thanksgiving holiday, we typically do not have that meeting. And then your meeting in December, we're going to start discussions on the land use code amendment to make provisions to allow for micro apartments within the city that just got launched by City Council recently. So that's an overview of what's upcoming.
Great question, because I think on the schedule it showed a meeting on the 28th of December, which is between Christmas and New Year's. I'm really hoping that's wrong.
The Planning Commission meets on the second and fourth Wednesday, so that is the fourth Wednesday of the month. Typically, we do not, in the last couple of years that I've been here, we have not had this.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Are there any other reports from any of the commissions that you'd like to share about it?
No, okay. No other updates.
Are there any questions for Tara? Okay. Move on to our oral and written communication. We'll talk first about the oral. For total time for oral communications is 30 minutes. Speakers will be allowed up to 3 minutes to speak. Tara will be calling on the speakers in order in which they've registered, either in person or online. And if anyone from the public has missed the 5:30 registration deadline, you may still provide public comment. Please use the raise hand function in Zoom if you're attending virtually, or motion to staff if you are in person to indicate that you would like to speak. So Tara, I'll call the first speaker.
We do not have anyone signed up to speak online. We do have one person signed up to speak in person, gentleman sitting in the audience, so please come up.
So is this microphone?
What is the best place for him?
This microphone?
He can just sit in the
I think if you sit in the front row, that should be adequate.
It's okay,
should
I can be able move to it a little bit.
And if you will pause until Tara gets up the time.
I believe this 100,000, but actually it was to be effective. This is okay. Hi, guys. Zichard. Yeah. My name is Alex Zimmerman. I'm president of Stand Up America. It's okay? Yeah. I come to you not because I am ordinary idiot. You know what this means? That's because I want to be a consul, candidate for consul 23 in Delhi. That's my I have 10 weeks election before, so nothing different. But difference between me and you is a fundamental difference. I'm ordinary idiot, you should be a smart figure. That was exactly what's happened. Why we have right now collapse. It means that the smart idiot control everything. That will be too early in the story. So a couple months ago, we're talking about intervention of Amazon. And I'm totally don't like this because I have intervention. I see intervention in my pain in my ass, but at Microsoft did in 96. And I spoke about this in concert many times. And 2 months ago, I told you how much this cost approximately, because I speak 2 weeks ago in concert chamber, you know what this means. And I talk I like a business council guy, estimates so approximately for every Belgian citizen. We have 150,000 plus minus here. It will cost approximately $5,000 per year each time. So my question right now, why are, for example, disabled men, senior citizens, low income, you pay $5,000 for make Amazon, how much if they have $1 trillion in stock, $100 billion this region. They are the biggest idiot. Yeah. So I ask you in make analysis. And calculate how much it is supposed to be cost to every Belgian citizen. You know what this means, intervention of the bandit. Amazon for you, a few bandit. Yeah, so 2 months gone, and for my understanding, you're the one doing this, and you don't deal doing this. Well, if I call you super smart idiot, because you will pay for this, and you're quiet about it. It's not because you rare it, you know what I mean, because it's part of your mentality. Because when it's not a part of your mentality, you want to you one. You, for example, stand up and talk, yes, we need to bring this to people officially. How much will be cause this intervention? You know what I mean? So I will come to you and repeat this. When I will be consul, I clean this chamber total. I'm straight man. No problem. Yeah, so I ask you again. Make official investigation. You know, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people supposed to be have a little bit of education, more than high school diploma, from my understanding. It's not too much problem in investigations and make official analysis. So please, when I stay in line for next year meeting, that will come and repeat again and again, again and again, like I doing this before. From Tacoma to Everett, Seattle, and Hungary City, Dublin City. You know what this means?
Your time speaking time is up.
Thank yes. You. Thank you very much. See you next time.
Okay.
Yeah. So please keep doing this because it's your job. Thanks. Have a nice day.
I'd like to make a point of personal privilege that I don't agree with Nazi symbolism being used in a public setting. Thank you.
Are there any other speakers? Okay. Do you want to do a summary for any written communication?
We have not received any written communications.
Okay.
No new information. Verification.
Okay. So I'm assuming we won't have a public hearing, and we're moving right on to the study session.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Great. So, Jennifer Ewing, welcome.
Thank you.
We're going to provide the commission with a presentation and overview of the Environmental Stewardship Plan and actions to date. And we'll do the same routine. So after she does the presentation, we'll call on each of you to ask questions. So go ahead and present.
Okay, sounds good. We're going to just switch spots here real quick.
Good evening, Commissioner Ferris, members of the commission. It's nice to be here with you this evening. I'm Jennifer Ewing. I'm the Environmental Stewardship Program Manager in the Community Development Department, also in the Planning Division with Tara and Emil. So we work closely together. The last time I presented to you was back in 2020, as we were working on the update to the Environmental Stewardship Plan, which was adopted at the end of 2020. So I'll just kind of give you an update on what we've been doing basically kind of since then, and an overview of the plan as well. So yeah, we'll talk about the plan, the implementation progress, a little bit about just some of the kind of bigger things we've been working on this year. Also some of the actions in the plan that do have land use implications, you know, that will be addressed as part of future projects or current projects. And then also just talk a little bit about what we're hearing from the community. So as a reminder, when we updated the plan, we had an environmental stewardship plan. It had some goals here and there. And so we had some policy direction, but it wasn't, we had some kind of holes. So we kind of reviewed all the goals we had and then also looked for where we maybe needed some new goals and targets for our work. So we updated our climate change goal to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions 50% by 2030 and 80% by 2050, and established some other goals related to energy use, waste, some new goals related to transportation, and also kind of reiterated some of our existing goals related to mode share and that sort of thing, and also kind of reiterated some existing goals around tree canopy and natural systems. So that was kind of the first step in the process. Then with those goals, we developed a list of actions to achieve the goals, went through a few rounds of public outreach and engagement, and then put out a draft plan towards the end of 2020, and then council adopted the plan in December of 2020. So we've been working on implementing the plan for the past, I guess, not quite 18 months, but 20 or so months, I suppose, 21 months. So the plan includes 78 actions. It's a five-year plan. So the intent is, you know, we use this to guide our work over the next 5 years. But then we can update it in time. Things will change. We'll accomplish some things. The context may change at the state level, which it certainly has. The plan covers both kind of our entire city and actions that can impact sustainability throughout the city. And then it also covers our city operations. And we have, you know, direction from council to lead by example in our city operations. So thinking of like making our buildings more energy efficient, transitioning our city fleet of vehicles to electric vehicles, that sort of thing. We tried to be pretty specific in the plan around, you know, what we're actually doing, which department's going to lead it, what, you know, when we developed the plan, what was the estimated time frame. And then we also have some direction on how to monitor and evaluate our progress with the plan. So we've been providing updates to council quarterly on the progress towards implementing the plan and how we're doing on those 78 actions. And then annually, we provide an update on our environmental performance metrics, so like our greenhouse gas emissions inventory. And so I'll talk about that in a minute. So yeah, that's kind of a quick overview. And then the little icons at the top here, those indicate the five focus areas in the plan. So that's climate change, energy, mobility and land use, natural systems, and waste.
Cute little icons.
Oh, thanks, yeah. it's kind of, can be dense text, so it makes it a little more digestible and visually appealing sometimes with the icons and everything. So here's kind of just an overview of what we've been working on this year. Some of this was work we started in 2021 that we've, you know, just been continuing, and then we added some new actions as well that we're working on. Some of the work in the plan is led by the environmental stewardship team, and then there's also quite a few other actions in the plan that are led by other departments. or other team members within community development. So it's definitely an interdepartmental effort, not all kind of led by one department or one team. So then the plan includes a mix of different types of actions. Some are more outreach and engagement related. Some are more kind of programmatic, like developing incentives and information to help residents and businesses take action or providing technical assistance. And then some of the actions in the plan are really more kind of code or policy oriented, like the tree regulation update, for example. And some of these could potentially be a bit of a mix, where there's some policy implications, and then there could also be more sort of programmatic implications as well. And then kind of underpinning all of this is what we're calling enhanced engagement. So as part of the plan update, we obviously did a fair amount of outreach and engagement with both our residents, but also stakeholder organizations. And we heard direction from our council and the community, you know, a desire to continue this outreach and engagement. So
sorry to interrupt. Apparently, Commissioner Morisco cannot see the slide advancing for some reason. So I don't know what's going on.
Okay. Should we? Should I stop the sharing, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, should I just share? Oh, maybe I want to share that one. Okay. All right. Hold on 1 second. Oh, screen share. So I think we want to share that one, the screen share, maybe. Commissioner Morris, so can you, I'm going to just move forward to one screen.
Can you see now?
Yes, it will help the work plan to the plan implementation progress.
Okay. Apologies for that. Maybe we're sharing the wrong screen. Let me just go back to this one. Yeah, so we've been continuing the outreach and engagement, kind of a two-prong approach, both engaging with our residents. We've been doing town halls twice a year, and then with community and partner organizations, we've formed a sort of informal sustainability leaders group that meets kind of roughly quarterly as a larger group. And then we have some kind of smaller working groups that have been helping to shape the development of some of our new programs. So I'll talk a little bit more about some of the work we've been doing this year. And then this is kind of a snapshot of the summary we provide to council on how we're doing in terms of working on the various actions in the plan. The plan also does include some actions that are more kind of things we have incorporated into our ongoing operations. So not necessarily a project we can just cross off the list, but things that are more ongoing. But we really want to kind of just demonstrate that this is a plan that is not sitting on the shelf. We are really actively using it to advance our work. So we do update this quarterly. We're kind of working on the next update on this. It'll go to council in November. So there's maybe a couple things that have changed, but this is, you know, a good sort of overview of where we're at. And then we have posted all of the progress reports on both our environmental metrics and the progress towards implementing the plan. We have an online dashboard that has all of that information. And I did not put the URL on this slide, and I'm trying to remember what it is. I think it's bellevuewatt.gov/ESI performance. Okay, so just to kind of give you a overview of sort of one of the main metrics we look at, our community greenhouse gas emissions. So we look at emissions from all of the buildings in Bellevue. We get data from PSE on energy use. We use transportation or vehicle miles traveled data from the PSRC, Puget Sound Regional Council. And then we get data on like how much waste we have. Those are kind of the big ones. So, and then so you can see here in the graph, the emissions kind of do go up and down every year. A lot of that is because of the, just sort of changes in the electrical grid. So the sort of fuel mix that Puget Sound Energy uses from year to year kind of changes based on, sort of what the electricity demand is, if it's a really cold winter or a really hot summer, et cetera. And then you can kind of obviously see, Oh, there's my mouse. In 2020 and 2020, obviously there was a big dip in emissions due to COVID. 2021, it was kind of interesting to see what happened with emissions kind of coming back up a little bit, but not completely rebounding to where we were at pre-COVID. So I, you know, it's kind of interesting to monitor it. I think 2022 maybe will be sort of the new normal, I guess, if you will, in terms of our emissions. I think it'll be interesting to see the impact of, you know, people working from home more. That definitely has an impact on our transportation emissions. One other thing to note is just that, you know, our emissions have gone down 20%. Over the past 10 years, and that is despite, you know, pretty significant residential and job growth in Bellevue. All right, so, oops, there we go. Oh. Okay, so I'll just give you kind of a quick overview of some of the things we're working on. So as you saw in the previous slide, you know, our kind of two biggest sources of emissions are energy and transportation. Our transportation department obviously kind of leads the most of the transportation work, but we work collaboratively on electric vehicle related issues. And then on the energy side, that's where we've kind of invested a fair amount of effort in the past year and a half, developing two new programs, one to support larger commercial, primarily commercial buildings in reducing energy use and complying with the newer Washington state law called the Clean Buildings Act that will require buildings over 50,000 square feet to meet certain energy efficiency targets, not starting until 2027. So there's kind of a longer compliance timeframe for that law. But if the, for a building that is not in compliance, you know, it can require capital investments and that sort of thing to improve the energy efficiency. So we brought on McDonald Miller, a local engineering and company that is providing technical assistance to Bellevue buildings to help them understand kind of where they're at with respect to what their energy target is and what they need to do to get into compliance, and also helping them pursue different incentives from the state and PSE to help them get in compliance. So yeah, we're excited with how that program is going. We've helped almost 100 buildings benchmark their energy use, which is kind of just the initial study you do to understand how energy efficient it is. We have another 70 or so kind of in the pipeline for that. So it's also giving us really great data to understand what the building portfolio in Bellevue looks like in terms of its energy efficiency. And then the Energy Smart Eastside program, that's a partnership with Kirkland, Redmond, Mercer Island, and Issaquah. We're focusing right now on providing outreach and education and some incentives to encourage residents to install energy efficient heat pumps. So, and then kind of as we were developing this program, the Inflation Reduction Act was passed at the national level, and that includes a lot of great incentives for different energy efficiency strategies you can do in your home, but in particular, installing heat pumps. Those incentives mostly start next year. So we're kind of gearing up a lot this year to really get ready next year to help our residents take advantage of some of those federal tax credits initially, and then there's going to be some actual discounts coming later in a whole new program the state has to create that will be more geared towards low-income residents. So really excited about that to help both kind of larger commercial buildings in Bellevue and then also residential buildings. We're also starting to work with some affordable housing properties in Bellevue to look at ways to help them reduce their energy use, because the tenants in affordable housing properties normally have to pay their utility bills. So that's kind of one strategy we have of, you know, both achieving our energy reduction goals, but also kind of helping to improve affordability for Bellevue residents. And then a couple other areas to highlight. I'll talk a little bit more about just the comprehensive plan update and how we're looking at climate change as one area that we can, you know, potentially strengthen in the comp plan update. Associated with that, we're doing a climate vulnerability assessment. So that's kind of looking at the science of climate change, how that's going to impact the Northwest, and then, you know, what does that mean for Bellevue, basically, and how can we kind of factor that into our long-range planning? And then also, you know, what are some of the policies and things we should consider to help make Bellevue more resilient long-term? We're also looking at, you know, other considerations around air quality and, you know, how we might want to factor that into any policies in the comprehensive plan update. And so those are kind of a few different areas outlined in the environmental stewardship plan. And then on the natural system side, the big one really is the tree code update. That was probably one of the top things our residents expressed interest in the city moving forward on, and some of the kind of pre-work has been happening and is anticipated to go to council for formal launch in the next few weeks or so. And so that, I'm trying to remember the timeline. I think that'll be coming to the Planning Commission, but maybe not until early next year. I forget exactly when, but that will be an interesting one. And then the Watershed Management Plan is an effort Utilities is leading. Not sure, has that come to the Planning Commission at all? Not yet. Right now, it's more focused on assessing the health of all of Bellevue's open streams. And then the kind of next phase will be looking at strategies for kind of maintaining and improving the health of our streams. So some of that can be through more kind of capital projects, but also potentially through, you know, future policy or code updates. And then a couple upcoming actions that we're excited about. We're going to just be doing kind of what we're calling an opportunity assessment to look at opportunities for creating more of like a sustainable district or eco district, potentially in the Wilburton neighborhood or also downtown. I think as part of the opportunity assessment, we need to kind of figure out what that might look like. Sometimes that could have more of a policy or code implication. Sometimes it's more kind of a partnership amongst organizations, or maybe sometimes it's both. The sort of diagram here on the right that I think maybe you were looking at, it's a little hard to see, but there's an opportunity in Wilburton to do district energy. So it's harnessing the waste heat from the sewer main line that goes through Wilburton. Which would be really neat if that were to kind of come to fruition. So I think, and that King County has a program that kind of enables that to happen. So we'll be kind of looking at some of the possibilities there and also looking at how that might impact Wilburton in particular in terms of the code and policy work there. And then another thing we'll be looking at doing is an electric vehicle roadmap. This will likely be a little more focused on kind of just identifying, you know, sort of capital projects planning, but there's a lot of funding, you know, from the different federal infrastructure bills, bipartisan infrastructure law, and then the Inflation Reduction Act that have funding, plus some other state funding for electric vehicle charging. So we're looking to do just some planning to get ready for that, to identify some good locations. So I'm not sure if that one would necessarily have any sort of policy or code implications, but I think as we get into that work further, we'll have a better sense of that. So yeah, just going back to the comprehensive plan update, you know, here's kind of a few of the steps we'll go through. We already do have some policies in the comprehensive plan related to climate change in terms of both reducing our greenhouse gas emissions and increasing our resiliency to the long-term impacts of climate. But we'll be kind of reviewing those policies. Those are all outlined in Attachment A. And then there's a few different efforts going on to provide guidance to cities on how to further incorporate climate into their comprehensive plans. So we'll be kind of doing an assessment of what we have, looking at some of the best practice resources that are coming from the state and the county, and I think also PSRC. And then, of course, also looking at just some of the updated policy language from the countywide planning policies and Vision 2050 around climate change to just add in some additional language. And then again, using the vulnerability assessment as kind of an input into our planning and alternatives for the comprehensive plan environmental impact statement. Okay, so just to kind of wrap things up, you know, as I kind of mentioned, we've been doing a fair amount of engagement. I think maybe you've heard some of the, you know, interested residents coming to council as well. I think there's generally a lot of excitement around the work that's happening, but a lot of desire for us to kind of do more and move faster and have more resources. So I think, you know, we've had a good kind of almost 2 years going implementing the plan, and you know, we'll look forward to getting some more resources in the budget for, you know, to kind of expand some of our work next year is kind of where that's headed. So we're excited about that. And yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up. Thank you for your time.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great, thank you. So time for questions from commissioners. We'll just kind of go down the line. Maybe I'll start with you, Mr. Brown.
Great presentation. Really inspiring that we've actually reduced climate emissions by 20% over that period. And we obviously need to do more. And part of that, I imagine, reduction was all of us were not thriving for 2 years of that. What do you see as an opportunity for significant climate change reductions in the future, given that you're implementing this plan? Like, is light rail going to make a huge difference, or other sort of investments?
Yeah, I think it will take a number of different things to really get us to our goal, but the kind of big areas are around our energy use and our transportation. So on the transportation side, light rail, you know, more making walking and biking more desirable alternatives for getting around. I think, you know, the transit-oriented development that we're focused on in Bellevue will kind of make all of the new growth sort of more sustainable, if you will. That will make, you know, all of those new sort of apartment buildings will have closer access to transit, so it'll be easier for the people, you know, who living in those developments to walk to wherever they want to go or take transit. And then on the energy side, it's really kind of a mix of reducing energy use in our existing buildings and then having our newer buildings, you know, being as energy efficient as they can be.
And do you have any leverage on PSE? You said it varies, yeah. their mix of what's hydro, what's yeah, you know, other sources of electrical production, we don't really have control over. There have been some comments and suggestions about creating a public utility.
Yeah.
Would we have more opportunity for leverage over a public utility than we do over a private entity like PSE?
Yeah. So yeah, we have some more as a kind of a combination of cities and other large entities. We have a voice with PSE. You know, there is a newer state law, the Clean Energy Transformation Act, that will require PSE to transition to 100% renewable energy by 2045.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, so they are required by law to do that. There are some kind of caveats where if they're not quite on track to meet their targets, they have some, there's a little wiggle room in there, but in general, that's kind of considered sort of the strongest law in the country in terms of transitioning to renewable energy. Bellevue is part of the King County Cities Climate Collaboration. This is the group led by King County and now consists of how many partners? Around 20 or so partners. So 19 cities plus the port are involved in that group. So that group kind of comes together to have more of a unified voice sometimes on different state legislative issues. With the PUD idea, I think the city is, you know, technically kind of neutral on that, but, you know, my sense is that there is already a law requiring that PSC transitions to 100% renewable energy. So.
Appreciate it. All right. Thank you.
I have three questions.
Okay, you're allowed three.
First of all, I couldn't follow something about the heat pumps. You are going to be encouraging residents and business owners to use heat pumps?
Yeah, mostly focusing on residents, but yeah.
And for what? For, you know, to, like, when they are trying to install air conditioning, or what's the can you tell me a little bit more?
Oh, sure, yeah. So, yeah, heat pumps are kind of considered one of the most energy efficient heating and cooling solutions. I think, you know, what we would like to encourage people to do, and, you know, it kind of mostly makes sense to install a heat pump if you have an older furnace or something like that and you need to upgrade it. So, you know, it's a little situation dependent and it's a bigger investment. But the idea is that it's, you know, just a more energy efficient climate-friendly solution than heating, like with baseboard heaters. It's much more efficient than baseboard heaters. You know, for people who want to transition from natural gas to electricity, that is a greener solution. And then also with heat pumps, we're, you know, in particular in our work with some of the affordable housing properties on the east side, we see that as really a more of a resiliency strategy, helping some of those properties have air conditioning, especially buildings, you know, that are more housing seniors or other vulnerable populations.
So that's a follow-up question that I have on that. So there are buildings that, because they're old and they just don't want to, make changes to the facade of the building, so they rather keep the facade that allow people to install air conditioning in their properties. So that it's kind of like, you know, and even though the city is getting warmer every year, we see a difference. So how are you intervening or advising property owners to you know, communities and building associations to actually allow for these for air conditioning to be installed in the unit, because again, we have senior citizens that need air conditioning, but they will not let them use it because of the look of the exterior of the building. So yeah. What's your take on that?
I think trying to install heat pumps in condos and buildings in particular is challenging. So I think that's still kind of an outstanding issue we're working through with the affordable housing properties. You know, with those, we've been working with the property managers. So that's a little bit of a different situation, but I think a condo, I think we definitely want to look at how we might assist or advise in that situation, but I don't know that we figured it out yet.
Okay. Can we go to slide 8, please?
Oops.
I wrote it down because I have a really bad memory.
This one?
Yes, please. 1 second. Okay. So this is the program where buildings have to upgrade their installations to be more green efficiency, and they have until 2027 to upgrade. And the properties that are from a certain size, right?
Yeah.
Which, how much?
50,000 square feet.
Okay. So for a building to be upgraded, it requires a substantial amount of money to, you know, to make the change. It could be $20 million, as much as that. They have up to 2027, right? So that's like around the corner. So a regular business, which is not, we're not talking about Amazon or Microsoft, they have to come up with millions and millions of dollars. And we're about to hit a recession. And if they don't meet that deadline by 2027, then what?
So this is a state law, not a city law, or city regulation. The state does have penalties, that I think are just based on the size of the building, for buildings that don't get into compliance. I think it's up to the property owner to get the building in compliance. So if it's a smaller business that's a tenant in a larger building, it's really not their responsibility. It's the property owner's responsibility. But it depends on where the building's at. Oh, there's a lot of buildings we're finding that are in compliance, or some of the buildings that are pretty close to being in compliance. You can kind of improve the energy efficiency more just through like no cost operational changes.
But there are many that they require millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure the connection is the state mandate versus the city. Because this is setting these businesses for failure or setting them up to having to pay, and I know the penalty is over like $100,000 a year for just businesses that are not that big. So I don't think there's something really that just doesn't compute to me here. Because, you know, look at the state of the economy, everybody's affected. They need to meet a deadline that is coming right up. What was my question on slide 7? Who remembers? Okay. So emissions are going down, right? Because of COVID or whatever. And you said that we, you know, there are other ways that we're trying to make sure that the emissions are going to continue coming down. But we were going to have a major influx of vehicles coming to the city because of the development that I don't think, I'm not sure how we're trying to make an effort to just maintain, you know, emissions down. And I have a question. So you're saying that use of energy brings emissions up, correct?
Using more energy.
So we are encouraging to have a bunch of electric vehicles that use energy, right? So we're trying to increase energy use from electric vehicles, which will increase emissions. But how are we going to try and skip down with, on top of it, the number of people that are coming into the city? So I don't think I just don't understand how we just having like uses of the light rail that is going to balance the equation. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah. Well, I think with the new development in Bellevue, I think the new office and commercial development, we really want the majority of those commute trips to be by public transit or walking or biking.
But that's not realistic. That's not realistic because we have thousands and thousands of people, and we're not going to put those thousands and thousands of people in the light rail and bike. Cars are going to continue being part of the city.
Yeah.
That's the reality. So it's not just one or two. We're not going to eliminate one to put everything, the pressure on the other options. All of the options are going to be off-site. Because we're going to be a bunch of people coming into the city. So we're not going to reduce one. It just seems like everything is going to go up. So.
Yeah, I think with transitioning to electric vehicles, even though that is more electricity use, that's electricity is a cleaner fuel than gas. So that would be, you know, the slight increase in electricity use and associated emissions from electric vehicles is, you know, offset by like a significant reduction in emissions from gas-powered vehicles.
Do we have the numbers?
Yeah, we are able to get data from the state on the number of electric vehicles registered in Bellevue. So we kind of use that as an estimate. It doesn't necessarily, you know, we can't really estimate of the trips coming into Bellevue. You know, if you live elsewhere but work in Bellevue, that's one where, you know, the data is maybe not perfect, what share of those vehicles are electric. But
are you asking about the electric diesel health environment? That's the question they thought
you were. No, I'm just trying to, because, you know, there's a, we have ideas that are, that work really well if it's isolated, but, you know, solutions, we have to take it from a really good perspective on the various factors that affect, emissions and energy consumption. So, and for me, thinking that one solution that we're going to lead everybody to start using bicycles and walking on the electric rail is unrealistic, that that's a solution to lower emissions and the use of electricity. Cars are going to continue being used, and we are going to have improvement of vehicles, because that's a natural progress of the city, right? That's just, you know, there hasn't been a city where it grows and there are less cars. I am not aware of any of the cities of the world where that happens. Are you? Anyone? I don't see it.
Well, I'm not following what you asked. So you're saying that if we encourage people to do more bike or walk or more electric vehicles, that doesn't help the emission?
No, it does. But I'm trying to say, you know.
At the same time, you have growth that cancel each other?
Yeah, or it really doesn't have the impact that we think. And that's what it's not clear. So, you know, and I don't think it's one thing, it's all of the things together that is going to bring this balance or is going to help us achieve this goal. But one thing doesn't cancel the other, and one thing will not be the solution for the bigger problem, one or two things. It has to be all together. It has to be a mix of everything.
It's not my turn, but I don't understand how that graph shows our emission is going down. Like that, there is no way from that graph you can say our emissions.
That yellow line is.
That yellow line is, I think, the expected, is not the trend.
Yeah, the orange line,
like annual target,
is where we should be.
Yeah, it should be. I don't think there is any. I am good with math, I guess. There is no way we can interpret. This is just 20 and 21 exceptions. I don't think. And if you look at before that, there is no sign that it's going down.
Right.
So just wanted to make sure that you're clear on that, or at least that's my opinion. There is nothing going down in that graph. And that yellow line is not the trend line that's showing it going down. It's just what they expected it should have, that we don't have it in 2021.
The yellow or orange line is where we should be. So we are slightly above. The annual target for 21. And yeah, there was, you know, I think between 2011 and 2019, there was a little reduction. I forget, like 5 or 8%, something like that. There was.
And then COVID.
I just wanted to mention that my thought, the misinterpretation of that line is a trend, but right. That's not the trend. It's just
what it's target. Yeah.
I sat in front, I could see it, a very good student. I sat. I have also three questions because she did that. And it's going to be a bit negative because I put my mind that there is no way we can get where we want to get in 2030 for sure. Hopefully you prove me I'm wrong. Anything about educating people? Do you have that in your plan? Like not just getting their opinion and engagement, but what is the city on educating businesses, educating residential, educating people, hey, you can do this and this and this.
Yeah, we launched, education is definitely part of our plan and our program. We did launch a community climate challenge program that's really all about educating residents about what they can do. We haven't really had the capacity to kind of invest in that program and do as much outreach and education around it as I think we would like to make it more impactful, but I think that's definitely kind of on the plan for next year to do more around that.
So I really encourage you guys to do education and spend, again, I know you don't have resources, spend a lot of money in there. I think if you start that, I think by 2050 or 40, you can get to somewhere, especially residential and also businesses. You said there is 5 areas and there is 72 items?
Or yeah, 78.
78.
Yeah.
Do you know, can we, are we able to measure each of those 78 and the impact on how they are improving our metrics? But you showed 3 metrics that we are kind of following. Can we relate each of those 78 to those big 3 metrics?
Some of them, yes. Others are a little bit harder to measure. So it's a little harder to really measure the impact of outreach and education. You know, if we were to see that people in Bellevue started using 3% less energy, you know, and maybe you, there are ways of kind of eliminating the impact of weather on your energy use. You know, can you definitively attribute that to our outreach and education? You know, there's some things, it's a lot of estimating, basically. There are other things where, you know, we can, for like our own city facilities or other larger buildings, if we are doing energy efficiency improvements to the buildings, we do know pretty well, you know, we used this much energy before and then we, you know, replaced our boilers or whatever and put in some new lighting and now we're using, or we expect to use this and we're using this. So there are certain things that are much easier to measure. I think with light rail, we will be able to, you know, hopefully get some good data that might come more from PSRC in terms of the ridership and some estimates around, you know, how people have maybe switched from driving to work and that sort of thing. So there are some areas that are a little bit easier, or you can have a little more confidence in terms of measuring the impact on.
So out of those 78, do you know how many of them are really tangible, like really correlated to measurement, and some of them is really hard to measure?
I don't know off the top of my head. There are a number of things in the plan that are really more kind of initiatives we want to undertake that can, you know, result in emissions reductions, like evaluate the potential for an eco district in Wilburton. You know, that alone may not necessarily have an impact, but that's kind of setting the stage for more work down the road that, you know, if we were to have greener buildings there or whatever other sort of goals we might want to have for Wilburton, then it could be more measurable. So that, yeah, there's some things like that, that the first step maybe doesn't have a measurable impact, but it can lead to more.
Thank you. What is the percentage of residential over there? My eyes are bad. Can you see?
It's residential energy use is 24%, and then commercial is 25%.
And so is it the third big chunk? Am I right? The residential?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The only thing we are going to do is the heat pump encouragement next year?
We're starting with that because heating is really the biggest energy user in your homes, so that's kind of the one place to start, but we are really looking at growing the program to go beyond just
and phones. How is that going to be implemented, by PSE or by yourself?
That's implemented through our partnership with the other East Side cities, and then we have a nonprofit partner that's helping us run the program.
So as an individual person, you should make that very easy. Because there are many incentives of all of this stuff. It is so hard. Like the amount of documents that I need to group to PSC that I did something, it was like some program they had a long time ago. It was like, if I would pay the full amount, it's much easier for me. Or even if I don't do anything, it's much easier.
Yeah.
So if for 24, if for the third big item there, our only thing is heat pump,
yeah.
I think that's very hard for people to do. First of all, they need to know. Second, so that the awareness is the big part. And then how hard is that to prove, or what is the process to do that, I think is very important.
Yeah.
In the same genre, the same topic is the EV. Right now, I know several gas stations want to install EV, but the amount of PSE is charging them for doing that, of course they are not doing that. Like there is one gas station in Factoria. For two of them, the PSC started with 20,000 and eventually after everything became to 100,000. And of course they are not doing that. So my point is all of these incentives is great. Again, I'm not sure how great, they are there, but how we make them accessible and easy for people to use.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the key that if it is not, even one small heat pump is not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
If we don't know, if it don't encourage people to, and make it accessible for people.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's all. The very negative, encourage you guys, that last slide was perfect. If you go to the last slide, I think you said everything there. You are behind.
You
need to move faster, not on track to meet our goals, need to meet all of it's perfect, it's not as fine.
Just on your point about the heat pumps, we're definitely trying to design the program in a way, we want to make it simple and clear for people, and we want to help them take advantage of different financial incentives. And we have a partnership with a heat pump distributor. We're kind of building on a program that Seattle has had in place for 5 or 6 years. We have a $500 discount from the manufacturer and distributor. And then we're trying to work with heat pump installers who are sort of the preferred installers, who can just basically, they take care of all the paperwork for the customer. So yeah, we don't want to, have our residents dealing with a whole bunch of paperwork. We want to, so yeah, some of these installers kind of do it for you and then you don't have to do all of that work. We are trying to figure out with some of our lower income residents, we are going to be offering larger incentives, but yeah, there may be more paperwork involved in that. So I think trying to strike the balance of, making it easy and simple for folks, but also, you know, making sure we're following all the sort of guidelines we need to use some of the block grant money that we're also going to use in them.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
No, we're going to circle back. Mr. Vogel.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer, for a very good presentation. My first comment was just to thank Commissioner Brown for her rejection of Nazi slogans in our meetings. Those have absolutely no place here. Thank you for speaking up on that.
He's the best issue.
Yeah. And I had, because I have to keep up with my really smart fellow commissioner, I have three questions. My first question has to do with Bellevue's funding for these initiatives. The advanced materials referred to 2021 and 2022 funding, and then also proposed 2023 and 2024 funding. Can you share with us what those numbers are for 2021 and 2022 and then for 2023 and 2024 proposed? Because to my mind, money speaks to priorities.
Yeah. For 2021 and 22, the funding is sort of a mix of both city funds, both from our capital budget, operating budget. And then we do, traditionally are able to bring in a fair amount of grant funding. So for 2021 and 22, kind of not including the salaries, we had around $300,000 a year for the work, not including salaries and grants. I think we had another couple hundred thousand dollars in grants. We do have all of this documented. I'm just kind of forgetting the exact numbers because it's sort of like several different budget line items. And then for 23 and 24, 23 through 29, we're looking at a very significant increase in the budget is what's outlined in the preliminary budget right now. So that it's going to, what's proposed is an increase of like $10.1 million over that 7-year time frame. So it's, multiplying the budget by four. So we're really excited about what's included and I think that'll definitely allow us to kind of do more than what we're doing now, and also, you know, just kind of broaden and deepen some of the programs we have. There's also some funding for some more significant capital investments for our city operations. So, you know, we can really kind of walk the talk, if you will, in terms of making our city facilities more energy efficient and leading by example, getting into compliance with that Washington state law I was talking about, the Clean Buildings Act. We have some work to do for our public works building. So yeah, we'll be putting a new kind of smaller solar array on City Hall, expanding the solar array on the Bellevue Service Center, some other kind of energy efficiency stuff that's maybe not replacing some boilers and stuff like that. That's maybe not quite as exciting as solar, but, you know, has a really big impact. And then we're also going to be putting in place all of the infrastructure we need in terms of EV charging stations and electrical infrastructure to start greening our fleet. So, some good stuff in the budget.
The money, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, I guess one other related question I have is on funding. I think a clean energy transition is going to take a lot of capital investment. And you mentioned the Inflation Reduction Act, federal funding that's available. You know, the greenhouse gas reduction fund from that Inflation Reduction Act, I think has something on the order of about $27 billion available for state and local communities to get grants from. How much leverage is the city of Bellevue seeking, you know, to try and get federal dollars to help enhance, you know, what the city of Bellevue is putting up for this effort?
Yeah, I mean, I think we recognize this is sort of like historic investments and sort of climate-related actions. So I think we want to be well-positioned to go after some of this funding. On the transportation side, we're pursuing a grant. I think it's around $40 million for expanding our pedestrian and bike infrastructure. So some, you know, that's probably like one of the bigger ones, but I think that we're definitely very interested. I think there's also, you know, the federal government has the Justice 40 criteria, where I think they want to see something like 40% of the funds going to disadvantaged communities. So I think we need to understand what that means for Bellevue and how we can be competitive on some of those grant applications and maybe think kind of creatively in terms of what kinds of projects we would be proposing that would make them more competitive given some of those priorities.
Yeah, that's great. I applaud those efforts because I think it's going to take a lot of money to make that transition. And then my third question had to do with the clean building standards that we talked about earlier, and that the state has set a date of 2027 for compliance. And I had a question about whether Bellevue is going along with that implementation date, or are you seeking, to the extent it's legally permissible to do it, are you seeking to actually accelerate some of those requirements for buildings here in Bellevue?
Yeah, we're not necessarily looking to accelerate any of the requirements. I think the timeline the state has set out is the first compliance time frame is really for buildings, I think, 200,000 square feet and higher, and then 2027, I think, is for buildings 100,000 square feet. So it kind of it phases in a little bit, you know, and the size goes down. But yeah, I think we're trying to just make sure buildings have plenty of time. You also need like a whole year of data to prove that you're in compliance. So as you kind of start working through the process, that what feels like 5 years starts to kind of, it's a longer process. Part of the reason we launched our program is that the state has set aside $75 million in early adopter incentive funds. So the initial thinking was, oh my gosh, this money is going to get swept up immediately, and we want to make sure we get some of that coming to Bellevue. It's actually, I think, because this work is so complicated, it's taking much longer than I think people anticipated for that money to get sort of allocated. But we already have several proposals in for that funds, one for our public works facility, the Bellevue Service Center, but then also helping Meidenbauer Center and some other, the King County Library in downtown Bellevue, you know, some other buildings that we're kind of helping access some of that incentive funding, and then also funding from PSE.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Very helpful.
That's Mr. Morisseau, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Chair. I do have a few questions. Thank you, Jennifer, for the presentation. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yep.
All right. I have a few questions. The first one, Jennifer, do we know in the community-wide emission graph, do we know where we are for 2022 with respect to our annual goal? Okay. Another way I can ask the question, do we know that we are under our annual goal, or are we already beyond that?
For 2022, we don't know, because we get the data really after the end of the year. So it's a guess, really. I think some of it's based on sort of return to work patterns now that, I think as of this spring, we're maybe settling into a bit more of a routine in terms of, you know, how frequently people are going into the office versus working at home. But yeah, we don't have a sense really, but you know, probably the emissions will go up compared to 2021. It would be my guess.
And I would imagine our annual goal will keep going down. So where I'm going with this, 2021 goal was not met. It feels like 2022 is more so back to normal. I was very surprised to see in your the summary of environmental stewardship implementation progress chart that it says there's no barrier in re-strategizing the approach. If the chart is showing that we're not meeting our goal, shouldn't we reconsider the way we do things? I was kind of confused why this number is at zero.
Oh, yeah.
We know why for 2021 we did not meet our goals, and are we using that information to plan so we don't repeat the same mistakes in the future?
Yeah. So that summary chart kind of summarizes where we're at for the 78 different actions in the plan. So it's really kind of none of the actions we're saying we have any kind of barriers to implementing them at this point. You know, if something comes up and we say, oh, you know what, we thought we could do this, but we really have to totally change our plans, that would be the case. So I think we met that chart to mean something a little differently, I think, than maybe what you're saying, but I get your point. I think we're, since we're, you know, really only a little more than a year and a half into implementing the plan, we're not quite at this stage yet to really sort of re-strategize. It does take time to work on the, you know, building up some of these new programs and implementing the actions. So I think will definitely be an opportunity to kind of review our progress and start to consider, you know, making changes. But I think we want to hold off on that yet till we have a little more time to really implement the actions we're working on.
Okay, I think, I mean, that's fair enough of a position. However, that brings me to the concern, how realistic are we that we will be meeting our objectives in the designated timeline that we have? I believe it was Mo who mentioned that a concern in that regard. I think I share that. Do we have milestones along the way to track our progress? And do we have a system in place to kind of, when we do encounter barriers, when we do find things are not working, that we make changes accordingly? Because I look at the chart, for example, for the where the energies are spent, and transportation is at 37%. And I know we talk about light rail and we talk about EV charging stations. We know for a fact some people will not take light rail no matter what. We have the light rail on 112, but there's no parking. We've heard that before, that people don't have places to park their car. Therefore, before getting on the train to go, for example, to Seattle, therefore they might as well drive to Seattle. So where I'm going with this, what are the system, what are the changes that we are planning on? So what we know has not worked in the past, we don't repeat the same mistake, so we eventually get to our objective here in a realistic manner. What are we doing differently here? Because I keep hearing the same thing.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think we're still, I guess I would say that, you know, a lot of these things do take a bit of time, so we can't necessarily see... you know, these are pretty significant systemic changes in terms of trying to transition people to, you know, modes other than driving alone and, you know, reducing energy use in the built environment. So, I think we, you know, we definitely want to look and track the impact of what we're doing, but we also kind of have to acknowledge that it takes a little bit of time to get some of these things up and running before they can have a real kind of measurable impact.
I mean, I understand. I think we all understand that. My question is really, do we have specific milestones along the line where we check certain targets to make sure that we are on track to meet our objectives? And if not, then we plan accordingly.
Oh, okay.
I did not hear that. I did not hear any of that in the presentation. Great.
Yeah, we monitor our progress in terms of our environmental goals annually, and then every 5 years we'll update our plan.
Thank you.
Commissioner Vergara, do you have three questions?
No, I say I don't have three questions. I do have a couple of questions and maybe a clarification and a comment. But hey, first of all, great presentation. Very helpful to get such a broad summary of all the things you're doing. This is a very complex task with a clearly a very broad range of initiatives you're driving. So kudos to that. My clarifying question before I get to the two, you know, areas I'd like to go deeper on is on the targets. Were they established for the city or by the city?
I guess, but yeah, how would you kind of...
How do we know, like, what the targets need to be? So just to clarify.
I guess by the city, but kind of based on sort of best practices and what, you know, the science is telling us, what neighboring communities are doing, the county, the state, et cetera.
Okay. So, I mean, that's fair. So I assume, believed to be realistic targets based on what the science is telling us and what seems to be best practices and measurements across other jurisdictions in the past that have achieved, you know, considerable greenhouse gas reduction or carbon footprint reduction. Fair?
Yeah.
All right. That's great. So if we take that premise, obviously it's not going to be possible to drive 78 initiatives with the same porosity, maybe, but it's also unlikely that all 78 will have the same impact. And it's kind of going back to the points that have been already made. My question is, in a resource constrained environment, which you called out also, what are the top maybe 5 to 10 initiatives that have demonstrable impact that we can measurably register that we should double down on? Do we know that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think the initiatives were I guess it's sort of a mix, because some of the things, you know, can have a more immediate measurable impact, like some of the energy efficiency programming, but some of the other things I think can have a longer term impact.
Apologies. Want to maybe rephrase the question. What are the levers that have the largest impact that we can actually measure?
You mean policy levers or just different types of strategies?
Of the 78, what are the top few that we believe will have the largest impact? The reason I'm going there is because if we were to double down as a city on 5-10 areas of the 78 and really build incentives and drive resourcing and build adoption plans and all of that stuff that goes around that, which ones are they?
Yeah, I think it's the ones that, you know, reduce energy use in existing buildings, improve energy efficiency in new construction, increase renewables in Bellevue, you know, support vehicle electrification and reduce vehicle trips are probably the top 5.
Awesome. And if we were to take those 5 and look at that as a target achieved for adoption on each of those, maybe it'd be great to understand. And I know we don't have this now, but it'd be great to understand how far along that target that we're trying to get to would it take us?
Mm-hmm. Based on, you know, what our resources are or what the plan is, or
to get to our target.
Oh, yeah.
Bit of both, because we've established these targets based on empirical data from other sources that tell us this is an achievable target.
Yeah, yeah.
So that'd be something to double click on, that'd be really nice.
Yeah.
So that we're not chasing 78, but maybe chasing 10. And then we're, of course, going after the broad range of initiatives, because it is a complex problem. But at least we know the one that we should really focus on as a group, as a city, and, you know, get up there.
Yeah.
Simplify the problem a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool. Last thing I had for me is I really love the district energy idea. It's not easy to implement, but it's definitely super innovative. And, you know, with downtown and Wilburton, that seems like a great thing to do. Has that been seen to be successful anywhere else?
Yeah, I think there's a number of examples of district energy in Vancouver, BC. I think outside of the US, it's more common. It is quite common on like university campuses. So the UW has district energy. Downtown Seattle has a district steam plant. So some older cities have more like district steam. So it kind of varies. But it is complicated, but it's doable. But I think, you know, it requires a lot of buy-in and support and partnership from the different organizations involved in it.
Ownership of that process.
Yeah.
And so that would be the other suggestion I have, is to look at the feasibility of implementation vis-a-vis the impact of these initiatives. And then maybe make that list up as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I have like 5 questions.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if you guys have it. Let's your 3.
Well, I'll say, because I'm actually not going to do all 5. At most 3. But why don't we go back one more time with you all?
I did have a couple of follow-up questions. On the light rail, we know there's going to be a delay with the I-90 tearing it up and putting it back in again. It's been suggested, I believe, by our former mayor and current city council or county council member, Claudia Balducci, to, even if we can't get all the way to Seattle, to run the light rail on the east side. Have you identified if that's going to actually save any greenhouse gas emissions?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not something I've I've looked into. I don't know if the city's really evaluated that.
I mean, I'm assuming some of those runs were going to be just on the east side from people going to Bellevue to Redmond and back again or vice versa. So it would be interesting to see how that light rail would work. And then on something that's more impactful, I think, to the Planning Commission, single family homes has a certain amount of use of energy versus a multifamily home. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the multifamily home increased density tends to decrease the amount of greenhouse gas emissions. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So in order for us to meet our greenhouse gas emissions and save the planet, we might need to have more density in cities like Bellevue.
Yeah, density definitely helps.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Just wanted to throw that.
Appreciate
yeah.
that.
Okay. So that's it. That's all for me.
Commissioner Collette, I know you wanted to.
Yeah. So first of all, this is so exciting that we're asking all these many questions because this is not what we're talking about. And I am new at the commission. I don't know what the future experience is. So, I really.
Stop that car.
I am the new where. The new where. The new where.
You cannot do that.
Okay, so I think I want to go back to Vice Chair asked what are one of the top items from the list that will have most impact, and you said reduction of vehicle use. That's one of that. Okay. Now there is a terminology that I've heard today, tonight, and other times that it's like when we transition people to the other options. Of transportation. My point from this is that I think that is just not possible. That is unrealistic and that will not happen. And I think if this is, I don't know if this is what you need, but I want to explain. So if she's a mother, I don't have children, if she's a mother of three children and she has two teenagers and a 7-year-old, she is not going to leave her car at home on rainy November and take a bicycle to move around the city with her three kids. Three backpacks and a grocery. She's going to continue using her vehicle. I don't know how you're going to turn, you know, the idea of transitioning people. I think what is going to happen, like vehicles are going to continue being used. We're just going to incorporate new options, you know, for people to choose. But we're not going to make people go from here to here. We're just going to incorporate new options. And I think it's fabulous because I think there are options that, you know, there's private organizations that will offer options. The city will offer options and it will work really well as we work together, the private and the public sector, to offer multiple options to the city. So the terminology that we're using, that we're going to transition from people to using one thing to another, I just don't think is an accurate way to represent what we should be hoping to do. I think we just need to go for more options again from both the private and public sector. Now, this is, excuse my math, but I need help with my math. And excuse my...
Literally, back of the napkin.
So obviously these numbers are not correct. So I'm just going to say that we have currently 40,000 vehicles in the city of Bellevue, right? He's incorrect, of course. We're going to increase, what is the number of people that we're expecting to come into Bellevue? I use the number 17, which is not accurate, but, you know, to have an idea. We're thinking that we have currently 40, we're going to bring 70, and we want to reduce vehicle usage. That's not going to happen. We're going to have more vehicles, and we're going to continue using more vehicles. Maybe we're not going to have all of these many vehicles, but we will continue having more vehicles in the city because it is the natural transition in a city that is growing. Am I not understanding this correctly? Am I wrong? Is this a math? Am I estimating this incorrectly?
Vice Chair?
Can I comment? Two things. And this might be again maybe rudimentary and please weigh in with more expertise. One, reduction in greenhouse gases has to be taken in a relative term. So if you did nothing, what would happen versus incentives you build in for a change in transportation mode, there will be an impact. Part one. Part two, I don't think the thinking is to transition people from one mode to the other. There are, people used to call it the four-step transportation model, and there are others that can predict or that try to predict empirically if we have a certain mix of land uses within a certain proximity from each other, mm-hmm. and a mix of jobs and housing within that same boundary, the likelihood of vehicle trip generation is X versus a different mix, which will have a lower impact in terms of vehicle trips. That essentially means that some of those vehicle trips convert into pedestrian trips because of proximity of those uses, not based on one user, but in aggregate, all the users within that space.
Right.
And you can validate that through various studies done in different jurisdictions, mm-hmm. and it's actually fairly reliable data. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe the way at least I think about it.
I can give you two examples.
Yeah.
So I used to live closer to downtown.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah.
So I was using my bike to go to Amazon offices that was in downtown.
Uh-huh.
So at the moment I moved there, I never uh-huh. used my car because I was living very close, like 2 miles to Everest office. So uh-huh. I used my bike. Now I live further, so you are right, I'm lazy and rain is making me not
exactly.
And I use my car if I'm going, but now I live by QFC. So all of my grocery is stored, I just walk, because just walking distance and there is light. So my point is, as Vice Chair mentioned, you can transit by, if the city is built correctly, you can do other way of transportation of using your car.
Correct.
And I think it's going to, so you're right, you're saying, hey, the growth happens and everything, but it's not just the growth happens and if you don't do anything, you are right, everything is grow linearly. But if we can encourage people and make it acceptable people to walk or to use bike or to use other methods of transportation, then they can maybe not use their car and use other those transportation
yeah.
to eventually long sum the help to reduce reduction.
So to your point and to your point, you know, basically you're trying to say what my point in other words, but I do keep hearing like we have to transition people into the other options. And I think that is not
and
the
some
way.
Trip.
No, we just have to offer them options and people can adjust to whatever adjusts, you know. So I think that's
you're not using anyone's car.
Yeah, but we have to be careful, like, the way that this information is being presented. Because, you know, if you tell a mom, I'm going to transition you, like, no, thanks, no thank you, right? So I think it's important that as we talk about options and growth, and, you know, we do explain this, and, you know, these numbers, I don't have the numbers. I don't see them. I see that those are fairly easy accessible numbers to understand it. I don't know where they are. I want to learn because I'm very passionate about this topic, very, very passionate. And because again, it doesn't like, you know, the idea that we can see continuously reducing vehicle reduction is, I insist, I don't think it's going to be reduced. We're just going to have, you know, more options that are going to offer alternative ways for mobilizing within the city. But we are going to have increase in vehicle usage. That's my point. I mean, I think the total numbers when the vehicle is coming, we're going to have increasing vehicle usage. Unless the numbers show something that is completely opposite of what I am saying.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, we're trying to reduce emissions despite growing population and jobs. So that kind of by definition means more trips in and around Bellevue. I sometimes kind of think of it as like with all the new growth that we're going to have, that's going to, you know, go into our growth centers and those jobs and residences will have kind of more walkable, easy access to transit and to amenities. So shouldn't be as reliant on their cars as, you know, if you live in a single family neighborhood in Bellevue, sometimes it is, you know, you are kind of reliant on your car. But so I kind of think for all the new growth, we want it to be sort of as, you know, climate friendly, if you will, as possible. But then also, how can that new growth help some of the existing development, residences, you know, workers, et cetera, maybe have easier and better access to more amenities or transit and that sort of thing. So it's kind of a... trying to reduce the trips for the people coming in, but then how can that also, you know, that increased density have a benefit on some of the people who already live here as well, in terms of, you know, maybe having more walkable access to a QFC or, you know, maybe not having to drive to drop off your dry cleaning or, you know, things like that. So I think that those are, to me, some of the interesting questions coming up. Well, there's a lot of interesting questions coming up in the comp plan update, but that, from my perspective, that's one of the more interesting ones.
Thank you for all your answers.
Yeah.
Commissioner Goebel, do you have anything to add?
Well, I have one follow-up question that's sparked by my fellow commissioner's brilliant questions, not by my own insecurity about Commissioner Borgata asked about priorities. I think that's a good question. One thing I wanted to ask you about is in looking at priorities. That you have, are you also looking at the temporal aspect of the impacts? And what I mean by that is with the built environment, when people build buildings, that's long term in terms of impacts. And your ability to change what's been built is more limited. And that's different from things like electric cars and other things. And so I wonder if in the prioritization of what you're looking at, whether you're thinking about that as well. Because there was a really thought-provoking article I read a ways back in The Economist about this. And they were talking about the challenge London, for example, is having in this area because they've got a huge built environment. And being able to turn that is really hard. So I'm just wondering if that's something that you're looking at when it comes to priorities, because it's hard to turn the ship once you've already, I'm mixing metaphors, but once you've already built all those buildings.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we're definitely poised to have a lot of development in Bellevue over the next 10, 20 years. And I think we kind of have to get it right because those buildings are going to be around for a long time. There is a lot happening at the state level in terms of kind of continual improvements to the building and energy code, that will, continue to require more and more energy efficiency in our buildings. Some cities are kind of opting to go above and beyond what the state is requiring, either through requirements or incentives. So I think, that's something that we need to kind of continue to explore, how we can kind of maximize the sustainability of some of our new development and, in my mind, kind of make them more sort of future-proof. So in particular with like electric vehicle charging, we're kind of on the verge of a big revolution with that, and the state building code hasn't entirely kept up with some of the new state mandates around how we need to how we will be transitioning in terms of the vehicles sold in Washington. So that's one in particular for like multifamily buildings, is having just 10% of the parking spots electric vehicle ready. Right now it's fine, but in 5 years from now, that might not be enough, and it's really costly to make that change. So it's definitely something we're thinking about.
Thank you.
Commissioner Wilkinson, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, thank you so much for coming back to us and sacrificing your turn. So one thing is that, am I right that 78 is belong to 5 initially? Am I right?
Yeah.
So we cannot just, we need to think about all of those 5. I think the issue is that you mentioned there is not enough metrics to know which one is working, which one is not working, to just find the top 5 or top 10. I think that's the issue. We don't know which one is going to impact, which variable, if every other variable is not there, is going to impact to the reduction of the emission. Am I right to say that statement?
I think we can figure it out. It's just, it's a bit of effort to kind of do that analysis.
Yeah. Complex effort.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's another issue that we need to know exactly which one is doing what. And I think the last thing I wanted to emphasize on what Commissioner Morso mentioned, I don't think we have a mechanism in place that if something is not, what happened, in 2022, you are saying you are not hitting our target. But Okay, so you just say okay, and then you show your gravity or not picking, and then you go to the next year. Like, I think we don't have enough mechanism because we don't have data. We don't know what is the impact of, we don't know what to do if we don't hit any of our targets in 2022, in 2023, in 2024. We just make a graph that you're not hitting the target, and then say, okay, let's just, then we just call, hey, the implementation is to take too long. We need to do that, and we need to do this, and so on. I think we need a better mechanism to start seeing whatever you're doing, if it's not working, then what next? And what is the other strategy that we need to implement to get to our targets?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that is sort of happening kind of through the budget process right now, and sort of a desire from the community for us to have more resources to implement the plan, and I think also from council. So I think that's kind of the mechanism by which some of that is discussion is happening.
And the big chunk of money from the feds didn't hurt.
Yeah.
Well, Nikki said you got, if this comes up every 5 years.
Yeah.
That's when you get to the
big. Yeah.
So. Commissioner Morisseau, do you have any follow up?
Thanks again, Chair. Jennifer, on the ESP action list of items, I do see a green building incentives. And if we go back again to the chart that shows where most of the energy is coming from, it's transportation, commercial, and residential. Are we thinking of implementing policies or providing incentives towards transportation, for example, to incentivize or encourage people to transition, as you mentioned, for example, whether that's subsidizing orcas cards or parking, or even for example, electrical vehicle charging. I believe it was again Commissioner Malakuchian who mentioned that some gas stations they're interested in providing access to electric vehicle charging, but the cost is very prohibitive for them. Is the city potentially considering incentivizing something like that? Are we considering providing incentives in these other three areas, transportation, commercial, as well, in addition to residentials, as I saw for the green building incentives on the list?
Yeah, I think that's something we're sort of still looking into and considering. I think through our commute trip reduction programming, we do work with businesses in Bellevue, you know, that have to comply with the state commute trip reduction law to have programming and resources in place for their employees on commuting alternatives. So, like, you know, for example, for city employees, we can you know, get discounted or free Orca cards. And we have some other, you know, we're kind of encouraged and given information about different sort of modes of getting to work. And so other, you know, similarly businesses in Bellevue do the same. So I guess we do kind of provide some assistance in that way to organizations here. I think we're kind of, looking at other ways we might be able to help install electric vehicle charging stations. But yeah, in terms of incentivizing people to maybe commute in different ways, I think that's one we're maybe still kind of looking into. I think there has been some work to support residents like at King County Housing Authority properties and having access to free Orca cards or reduced cost ways of getting to work. But there's maybe more we could look into there.
It was a e-bike discount for on the plan.
Yeah, I think I was reading the city of Denver is doing discounts for e-bikes.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like a lottery people are trying to get online the second those are made available.
Commissioner Morisseau, do you have any other questions or comments?
Yeah, it's not so much a question, but a humble thought. In our approach, maybe it's another way of phrasing Commissioner or Vice Chair Bogava's point. I think we need to be a lot more strategic in our approach. We do have data that shows us where we need to target Obviously, those top three, transportation, commercial, and residentials, are, I mean, it's there, 37%, 25%, and 24%. So I think in our approach, we need to be very strategic in targeting these areas first and foremost, if we really want to be serious and realistic and do things different to get to where we are trying to be. But that would be the thought that I would leave you and your team with, Jennifer. And again, I'm grateful for the work that you're doing. Thank you.
Okay, I promise I'll be quick. Again, thank you. You've done a fantastic job. I also have to thank you to all of you. I mean, some of the questions and the observations I think have been really valuable. So I'm not going to add very much. I do have two really quick comments and a couple really easy questions. couple quick comments is that when we're having a conversation about transitioning people out of their cars, I really do appreciate what you're saying and, you know, your description of the mother, et cetera. But I also think about putting an equity lens on that. I'm personally very familiar with a single mother that lives in one of the affordable housing units at Imagine Housing, three children. She has no car. So she has to figure out a way of getting around the city. And she has a job that she has to commute to. She also has a special needs child that she has to get some services. Her day is spent taking something like 8 different buses in a day, and she has no alternative. So point of all that is when we think about how we build our cities and making sure that they have access to the different services, I think that's really, really critical. One more comment also is, when I think about the use of mass transit, especially the light rail, which I'm super excited about.
Someday,
but it's also, it's great if you want to get from here to the airport, let's say. But when I think about getting from my house, I think you're close to my same neighborhood, and I want to go downtown, I really can't do it because there's no hub and spoke at all. And I keep thinking, even if we have some electric shuttles that go around downtown to get from point A to point B, and maybe you head out to some of our larger neighborhoods to get us into the system, I just think that that's going to be a way of really exercising that system a little bit better. So now my easy questions, and I promise they're easy. And I probably described this early in the presentation. You talked about, it sounded like you have a work group around sustainability, that you have people, what did you call that work group? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I'm trying to remember what I said. We have an interdepartmental team that works on implementing.
Okay, I misunderstood you. I thought you had some citizens that were involved.
Yes, we also have the sustainability leaders group.
That's
yes.
It.
Yes.
So my question is, who are those people and how do they become part of that group?
Oh, yeah. Those are people who are kind of representing their organizations and involved in the update of the plan. So, we have some organizations like Bellevue College, the Bellevue School District, the Chamber, the Downtown Association, and then some private companies in Bellevue that have sustainability programs like Microsoft and T-Mobile.
So some of the larger stakeholders.
Yeah.
That's helpful. It seems like that might also be an area where we become more intentional reaching out to not just the big guys, but also some of those mothers, for example.
Yeah.
And some climate activists who have a real stake in wanting their voices heard.
Yeah, and we do have some nonprofits, some local environmental nonprofits that are in climate activists involved. We do have Chinese Information Services Center. They're involved in a couple other kind of more community organizations that try to serve more diverse populations like HopeLink. We have KCHA. So it is, more of a mix than maybe the initial ones I mentioned.
Okay, great. Another easy question. You talked about engaging with Donald Miller in case mm-hmm. you do assessments. And I was a little unclear on A, what kind of buildings? Are those the commercial buildings? And B, are they having to the building owners putting the bill, or is the city helping to subsidize that, those evaluations?
So it's mostly for commercial buildings because commercial buildings are the ones that have to comply with the state law. And then the McDonald Miller is doing the benchmarking assessments kind of in kind as part of this partnership. And then the city's subsidizing the sort of scoping assessments that they're doing, where they kind of go into a building and do sort of an initial pass of like, these are the things we think you need to upgrade to meet your energy efficiency targets.
So helping in kind of scoping what they need to do, but not on the actually accomplishing.
No, we're not providing any funding to help with the actual capital projects, but we are having McDonald Miller help out with, you know, having buildings identify what the funding, potential funding sources are or could be.
Great. Yeah. Okay, one more. Really easy. Under the section of natural systems, as you talked about trying to make sure that we have healthy creeks, does that include daylighting creeks?
I think the watershed management plan is I think, as far as I know, just focused on the open stream. So I think there's separate efforts to look at how we're doing in terms of daylighting our streams and how we might, you know, kind of do a better job with that in Belred. But I think the watershed management plan is really more focused on just the open streams.
Okay. And the reason, one of the reasons I'm asking, A, I think it's the right thing to do, but also it eliminates probably some asphalt and things that are going to be heat sinks. So it seems like it does foster some more of what you're trying to do. I think that's all I had. One more. I'm not going to go around. I'll just ask. Does anybody have anything else to?
I just want to say thank you. And we are just some people that are passionate. So thank you for handling us and responding to our question very nicely and kindly. I appreciate it.
Obviously a hot topic.
Thank you for the great questions and good discussion.
And you are in such a difficult situation because you have all these people who are throwing darts at you.
I'm used to it now.
Responding to us so kindly and so respectfully and listening to us. There's no Nazi comments, and we'll say hi. Really valuable conversation for our city. Obviously, we live in a wonderful city because of the people who manage our city.
Yeah.
And here you are being so kind and respectful to listen to our, some of my information, my questions may not make sense. We don't know, but it's really, we really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's great input that, you know, really helps us as we're kind of looking at this next sort of phase of our work, really think through our priorities and everything. So I appreciate.
Great. Awesome.
You can come back in.
You're very welcome. So next on our agenda is our remote participation approval, but is our next meeting the retreat?
It is.
So do we need to have approval to participate? Or can we come back and
No one is going to be exposed to COVID?
No, promise.
No one knows that?
Mr. Moore.
Well, I just want to know, it is the day after the election. I may be hungover. Depending on the results.
Commissioner Morrison, I'm presuming that you will be participating remotely. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chair.
Okay. All right. We will assume that no one else is for now unless someone has to. Okay. Approval of the minutes. Did everyone have a chance to review the minutes?
I move that we approve the minutes.
Thanks.
Any discussion? All right, I'll agree to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Say aye.
Aye.
Any disapproval? Okay, so approved. I'm pretty sure we don't have any oral communication. Okay.
No more oral communication?
But why don't have people view? Environment is not the hot topic?
I was surprised because we had such a hot, you know, a huge public turnout for a last couple of months.
Well, would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. Any discussion? All approved, say aye.
All right.
Thank you again.
Thank you very much. I'm glad I had prior notice that he was coming back.
Thank you so much.